My guest at this time is former United States Ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton. He's now affiliated with the American Enterprise Institute, and we want to get his thoughts on a number of escalating situations in the Middle East, from the ongoing violence in Syria, which has led to the pullout of the U.S. diplomatic corps, to the growing uncertainty in Egypt, and, of course, the latest saber-rattling by Iran towards Israel and the United States. And, Mr. Ambassador, it's always good to have you with us.
Well, thanks again for having me.
Let's start with Syria. The administration, as I mentioned, pulling out the whole diplomatic corps, trying to get much tougher sanctions from the UN, but Russia and China not going along. What do you see as the most likely scenario that we'll be able to affect there if we can actually have much of a significant effect?
Well, I think the administration really doesn't have a strategy at this point. I think their whole effort was focused on that UN resolution, and they just went from bad to worse. You know, the original text of the resolution would have imposed strong sanctions, would have called for the Assad regime to be ousted, would have imposed an arms embargo. And Russia and China objected to all of that. It was all taken out, left a completely toothless resolution, which the Russians and Chinese then vetoed to the amazement of the administration. So I think they're scrambling. Now, I think the withdrawal of the American diplomatic personnel was obviously correct. There's no way to guarantee their safety. But I think the administration is really completely at sea at this point as to what to do.
A lot of the same questions now persist as arose in Libya, although a very different situation. The questions of arming the rebels, as Senator McCain has suggested, possible military coalition type activity, perhaps similar to what we saw in Libya. What do you think is the smartest way to approach what we're seeing there?
Well, I don't think the administration is really up to the job for one major reason, and that is the difference between Syria and Libya is in Syria the presence of Iran. It's very much in Iran's interest to keep the Assad regime in power. It's part of their arc of influence through Iraq, Syria, and Hezbollah in Lebanon, and they're prepared to shed a lot of Syrian blood to keep the regime in power. I just don't think the Obama administration has yet figured out that you can't negotiate with Iran over this or over their nuclear weapons program. So I just don't see that the administration really has a grasp of the relationship that's involved here or what to do about it.
So protracted civil war, is that the most likely scenario here in the coming weeks and months?
Well, I think it is. Remember, this is a proxy contest between the Iranian Shia Muslims on the one hand and the Arab Sunni Muslims on the other, led by Saudi Arabia. So I think that in these circumstances, Saudi Arabia and others will find ways to get weapons to the opposition. But as a practical matter, and it's not a happy picture, but as a practical matter, I think the civil war is likely to go on. Now, there are rumors today about Iran sending substantial numbers of troops, and that could make a difference, obviously, if that turns out to be correct.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Ambassador. Isn't the Syrian regime a Sunni? How does that all work together with the Shia in Iran and the Sunnis in Saudi Arabia helping the other side?
Well, it's predominantly a Sunni country, that's true, but the regime is led and has been under the Assad family dictatorship by Alawites, which are a much smaller group, an offshoot, really, of Shia Islam. This is not so much religious at this point as it is political. I think the Alawites very much fear if they lose power after all the things that the Assad regime has done over the years, there's going to be a bloodbath. So they have very little incentive to do anything but fight, and they've got the regime in Tehran on their side.
Talk a little bit about some of the messages we've been getting from Tehran lately. Just a couple of weeks ago, they seemingly offered this olive branch, which you and others saw as them trying to buy time for the nuclear program, but they were at least making this overture that they wanted a diplomatic discussion over their nuclear program. Then all of a sudden, within the last few days, we see more rhetoric, perhaps even more incendiary than we've ever heard before, about destroying Israel and every Jew on the planet. How do you put those two statements together?
Right. By 2014, no less. You know, I think the Iranians have been experts at playing, particularly the Europeans, but also U.S. administrations, fiddling with them while they continued the weapons program. And I think, as you correctly said, they were offering negotiation. They allowed the IAEA weapons inspectors to come in. they'll be coming back in a couple weeks. And it's all in an effort to buy time for them to perfect their nuclear weapons design and manufacture. So I would expect more of that as we proceed. It's complicated because of the parliamentary elections in Iran in March, and I think some people are engaging in rhetoric for domestic political purposes. Not that we've ever seen that anywhere else before, I suppose. But I don't really see at the bottom line any change from Iran's continued very hard work to get to a nuclear weapons capability.
Do you have any sense, based on their rhetoric or the IAEA or anything else, as to a close answer to everyone's favorite question of how close they are to a deployable weapon?
Well, they're very close. And you know, the honest answer is we don't know with any certainty. Defense Secretary Panetta has said several times in the past few weeks they could have a bomb within a year once they made a decision to do that. I think it's actually something they could do in less time. And that all assumes we know what there is to know about what's going on inside Iran. And I'm afraid the real truth is our intelligence has a lot of gaps in it. There's a lot we don't know. And that can't be good news from our perspective.
Other news has suggested that the Obama administration and Israel are not at all agreeing on what to do if, in fact, both sides believe that Iran is as close as you suggest to a nuclear weapon. Is that more for public consumption? And if ultimately Israel decides to act, we'll be on board? Or does this show that there's just a divide here that might not be bridged?
I think there's a big division between the Obama administration and the Netanyahu government. I think the Obama White House has been pressuring Israel mercilessly for the last 3 years not to use force. I don't know what the decision that Israel ultimately will make will be, but they've not hesitated to use force against nuclear programs in the past in states that were hostile to them. So I don't think they're going to ask U.S. permission if and when they decide to strike. I think we're just going to wake up one morning and find out about it.
Well, let's move south now to Egypt, where the 19 Americans are still being held. We've seen constant riots in the streets. Obviously, religious minorities have been persecuted over the past number of months. As it particularly relates to the election observers and so forth, we know that the administration is threatening to withhold foreign aid. They're obviously making very public demands for those people being held to be released. What else could or should they be doing right now?
Well, it's incredible to me that when the Americans were denied permission to exit Egypt now close to a month ago, that the administration right then didn't come in very hard to the Egyptian government and say, you allowed this activity that they were engaged in for years. And if you changed your mind, that's one thing. But nobody messes with American citizens. And you let these people out or you're going to hear from it. Instead, we tiptoed around. And now we're at the point where the Egyptians have filed criminal charges. If they can get their hands on these people, who hopefully are inside the U.S. Embassy compound and therefore can't be reached, but if they could lay their hands on these people, they'd be tried, they'd be convicted, they'd be put in Egyptian jails for God knows how long. And I tell you, an Egyptian jail is one place you don't want to be.
What does this tell us, sir, about the Arab Spring that this administration and many people on both sides of the aisle, quite frankly, seemed pleased to see when Mubarak was removed from power last year?
Well, this is what we get for throwing an ally like Mubarak under the bus so quickly. I mean, it may be that, that we couldn't have sustained him and that would have been impossible. We don't want to overestimate our influence. But by the same token, we certainly didn't do anything to assist him. And that was supposedly going to get us the gratitude of the new regime. And this is the payback. So I just think we have to be clear-eyed and cold-blooded about this. And if they're going to mistreat Americans, they're going to have to pay the consequences. You know, whatever else you want to say about diplomacy or international politics, the principal purpose of the American government's presence overseas is to protect American citizens. And if we fail at that, it's a pretty embarrassing situation.
Last question, sir. You considered the idea of running for the Republican presidential nomination, ultimately decided not to. More recently, you've endorsed Governor Romney for the nomination. Back to the original question about your campaign, though. How satisfied are you with the amount of conversation there is about these issues, and how well do you think Romney or any of the other candidates would be handling these situations?
Well, I think there should be more discussion, and this hostage, it really is approximating a hostage situation. situation at this point, shows why the American people ought to demand from their candidates that we have more conversation. And yet, if you look at the, I think, pretty pitiful performance of the mainstream media in the debates, in some of these debates they were asking questions about people's preferences for pizza before they asked their first national security question. So actually, it's not just the candidate's fault. It's the fault of the media as well. If there's ever a time we're going to get answers from candidates about how they would handle these international crises, this is it. So as citizens, it's up to us to insist that we get the answers.
Well, let's hope the questions are asked and that we get some substantive answers from both sides. Sir, thank you very much for being with us.
Always glad to do it. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton, now with the American Enterprise Institute. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.